Look, no matter what President Trump does, the left tries to characterize everything as a failure. Trump secures the border, leftists scream, defund ICE. Murder rates fall to the lowest since like 1900. Nobody covers it.
Trump has the medicine to beat the Biden disease. If we can win that argument, we're going to win the midterms.
Because it is a disease and it's easy to spread.
My grandmother didn't escape, you know, Eastern Europe for her grandson to be called a Nazi.
Being a guy from Hollywood, having conservative political views, voicing them. How do you say F you in Hollywood? Trust me.
Trust me.
That's it.
You see how much is left out of the media's coverage right now, and that's where really people should be looking.
That's when you know you live in the greatest country in the world, is when people talk about how much they hate this country, they hate the flag, but yet they refuse to leave. What do you think would happen if Iran did get a nuclear weapon? They put on one of their ICBMs, they launched it to Europe, they launched it somewhere else in other Middle Eastern countries.
But of course, they don't have any missiles that go over 2,000 miles. Oh, wait.
Except for the ones they shot at Diego Garcia.
Hi, I'm Dean Cain. Welcome to the homeland on Proud American Studios. Hi, I'm Dean Cain, and welcome to the homeland here on Proud American Studios. Let's talk TDS for a moment. Trump derangement syndrome. There seems to be an epidemic of this illness all throughout Democrats in Congress, the mainstream media, and the far left. Now, to date, there is no cure. It is a devastating disease that it seems once infected, the subject is consumed with suicidal empathy and a complete loss of brain power. Orange man bad. No. Orange man good. Look, no matter what President Trump does, the left tries to characterize everything as a failure. Trump secures the border. Leftists scream, defund ICE. Murder rates fall to the lowest since like 1900. Nobody covers it. Just crickets. Murder rates, they're down. That's big news. Fentanyl deaths drop off a cliff because he's eliminating narco terrorists. Oh, please don't blow up the boats. They're just fishermen. No, they're not. Trump lowers taxes for everyone. Bernie Sanders calls for a wealth tax. Trump removes Maduro and puts him in jail in a perfect military operation. And they proclaim that we kidnapped an illegitimate narco-terrorist dictator. Venezuelans cheer. The left cries. Gays for Gaza. I have to say, it's like chickens for KFC. They'll throw you off the roof for being gay in Gaza, yet leftists support Hamas because they hate Trump more. Free Palestine, from the river to the sea, they scream. They don't even know what river or what sea. No kings rallies. Listen, we had our first and only No Kings rally back in 1776. We got rid of King George, and we have never looked back. The idea that President Trump fancies himself as a king is just on its face completely ridiculous. But he'll troll the left just for fun, and he did it with the ballroom. You know, if I'm a king, why can't I even build a ballroom? He has a wicked sense of humor, and I am absolutely here for it. Trump won every single swing state, the popular vote, and he crushed it in the Electoral College. He became our elected president. That is democracy. That's our constitutional republic in action. No Kings wants to do away with the democratic process and remove him from power. Now, so who's the authoritarian now? Sure, he can be a little brash sometimes and he can say outlandish things, but that is part of his genius. He's one of a kind. He keeps our enemies off guard, and he's always looking to make a deal that benefits the United States of America. That's you. It's the art of the deal. He's extremely effective, and the establishment just cannot seem to stand that. He's messing up their game. He's eliminating fraud everywhere. So who could be against that? Only those who benefit. So who's screaming the loudest? Who is screaming the loudest? That should tell you something. Trump decapitates Iran, removes their ability to project power, stops them from getting a nuke, and secures a more peaceful future for our kids and grandchildren. That's amazing. The world's number one state sponsor of terror is defanged in a month. And people scream and cry about a temporary rise in gas prices. If you only watch CNN or MS Now or read the New York Times or the Washington Post, you might actually think that Iran is winning. They are not. It's madness. The truth is this. President Trump will probably end up as the most consequential president of my entire lifetime. He's not just changing the United States. He's realigning the entire world. And for the better. So, gentlemen, all right, here we go. Last week, the homeland was at CPAC the Conservative Political Action Conference, and it was in Dallas, Texas. We spoke to a whole bunch of awesome patriots like drug czar Sarah Carter, former UN ambassador, and Iranian drone expert Mark Wallace, Ambassador Carla Sands, Erica Donalds, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond. It was awesome. It felt fantastic. Patriots everywhere. It felt like home. We enjoyed it. It was a lot of work, but we had a lot of fun. So with me today in studio are Michael Kostelniak, who spent decades in HSI, even though he looks very, very young. And he did that in other law enforcement. And of course, on my right is Trey Lindsay, a DevGru SEAL Team 6 operator who could probably kill you or me with his pinky. Hopefully he won't. So gentlemen, what did I get right in my open? What did I get wrong? What are your thoughts on TDS? Do you suffer from it? Are you guys okay?
I think I'm okay.
For the moment, yeah, for sure. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, everything you said was accurate. Right now, we are just so twisted around, you know, the horn with everything that's going on here. TDS is a real thing. So it's a scary world right now.
It is. It's just frightening. Anything he does, they say, oh my gosh, it's just terrible. And Iran's a perfect example. How are we not winning? I mean, what is it? Unfortunately, we have lost 13 soldiers, and that's horrible. War is awful, and war is hell, and it's terrible. But 13 soldiers, if you had done the analysis beforehand, Trey, losing 13 soldiers but decapitating all of Iran, killing their navy, their air force, their nuke, I mean,
Dean, I would say it's definitely very one-sided. Yeah, so 13, every time we lose a service member, that's awful. You know, our heart goes out to the families. But at the same time, for the capabilities we assessed Iran to have, and we were able to, within a very short amount of time, completely decapitate them.
Very short.
Yeah, within a matter of days, that fact. Yes, again, still some work to be done over there, but pretty much a one, a very lopsided victory overall.
Tremendously lopsided. Okay, so outside of TDS that everyone that I was talking about is suffering from horribly, we were at CPAC last week. That was awesome. We were in Dallas, Texas. There were a lot of folks we saw. What were you guys' thoughts about CPAC?
It was fun. Yeah, first event I've been to, but yeah, I had to look forward to it every year at this point. I also heard the Turning Point USA is a good event, so hopefully we can attend that one as well.
I think we can work that out.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think we can. What were your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I thought the energy levels at CPAC were through the roof. All day long, overstimulation of everybody. The messages that were coming out were tremendous. There's a lot of progression and movement in the Conservative Party right now, and man, what an honor and what an exciting time to be there.
It was fun. We're going to have Matt Schlapp on the show later, and Matt Schlapp, of course, he's the big honcho at CPAC, and he's the reason we were able to be there, and so we're going to wrap up things with him, which will be a lot of fun. We saw, I love the Sarah Carter interview. She's amazing. I saw, Dr. Oz there, Ken Paxton, who, that was an interesting thing, Ken Paxton over John Cornyn in the straw poll there, and Prince Reza Pahlavi, the Iranian diaspora that was there to support him. It was a huge man. There were you could feel that electricity in the room. There's no question. So we're gonna move on to guests at this point in time. Let's go over to Sam. Let me go through our little papers here. Our first guest today. We have, and I'm going to screw this up, Sam. I apologize. It's that last name of yours, Sam Geduldig from CGCN. Is that right? Did I get close?
That's right.
Geduldig.
You did it.
That's a tongue twister, my friend. And so we have, you have written a few articles that we were talking about. Class dismissed. It's a double entendre. It's a play on words. Can you tell us a little bit about that article? Because we want to discuss that now.
Yeah. I have a daughter who's now 20 years old, but about 10 Bless years you. Ago, I took her I took her to a Broadway play, Wicked. And I was sitting in Wicked and watched them explain the Wizard of Oz from another point of view. And I'm watching the bad witch, the witch I've been taught my whole life is the problem. She's the reason everything is going wrong. And in Wicked, she's being bullied by the pretty you know, the pretty witch or the pretty good witch.
Yeah, they flipped it on his head.
She's treated very, very poorly. She has all sorts of impairments. She's bullied as a kid, and she's very much misunderstood.
She's a victim.
And all I could think to myself is this feels like Republican voters. Like, they're bullied. They're bullied by Hollywood. They're bullied by the elites in corporate America. They're bullied by the institutions, corporate media, news media, Hollywood, the education system. They're treated like they're the mean people. And all they just want to do is be seen and understood.
And I swear, Sam, did you read the story of my life? Because you're describing it to me right now. Having been in Hollywood and had been being a conservative, that's the way I have felt my entire life. So right. Bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, they have the power. They have the money. And they're convinced you're the bad person. And you know you're not. You actually think kindly and don't. They tend to project their worst thoughts onto Republican voters. So we become bigots and Nazis and, you know, I'm Jewish. Like, it's like my grandmother didn't escape, you know, Eastern Europe for her grandson to be called a Nazi because he votes for smaller government.
No, you're conservative. Like, you're a Nazi for sure. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's I've been called Nazi 900 times and a pedophile and a homophobe and an Islamophobe and a xenophobe and a racist. And it's incredible how they do that. Incredible.
Right. So, you know, I'm a lobbyist in Washington, D.C., and my job is to represent corporate America, different clients, and help explain where the difference between conventional wisdom is and getting something done. And a lot of times getting something done means reducing taxes, reducing burdensome regulations, reducing the impact of the trial bar, you know, things I've fought for my whole life. I was a Capitol Hill staffer before I became a consultant. And the goal of Class Dismissed 1 and 2 was to show our clients and people that spend money in Washington to try to move the needle in a way that is, you know, maybe for less government, less taxes, whatnot, how to explain the constituents of the members of Congress they're hoping to persuade. Now, a lot of times, you know, there's this conventional wisdom that Republicans are the party of the wealthy, and Democrats are, you know, the party of the poor. And that conventional wisdom has stuck with us for, you know, 20, 30 years. The reality is Kamala Harris had one demographic she cleaned Trump's clock with, and that was the wealthiest voters. If you look at the breakdown of the members of Congress, the 30 poorest members of Congress are represented mostly by Republicans. The wealthiest congressional districts are dominated entirely by Democrats. So the conventional wisdom is completely wrong. And we wrote Class Dismissed 1 and 2 to show our corporate clients, this is the path. You have to show poor voters incentives to get their members of Congress excited to vote in the direction you want. And it was just all to just kind of show them the playing field. The terrain changed. We're trying to show them how to go with it rather than resist it, because they're endlessly told to this day by the mainstream media that it's not true. That, you know, if you ask CNN or MSNBC or some of these major outlets, they refuse to look at the data. They'll continue to say we're the party of the wealthy. But if you break it down at the congressional level, all the statistics point in one direction. That is no longer true.
Yeah, the Dems have become the elitists and the party of the wealthy, and the Republicans are the ones holding strong American values. It absolutely flipped on its head. You're a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. That's almost that's you're playing in the mud every day. You're muckraking out there. That has got to be woof. I thought Hollywood was ugly and dirty. I don't know how you all live out there and make that happen. But bless you for being able to do that and having the right message. We appreciate the heck out of you, Sam.
Appreciate you.
Thank
you. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Man, if you're a Navy SEAL, my friend, you've gone out there and done, you had to fight and do wonderful things. He's got to be in there as a lobbyist dealing with that.
I can't only imagine the fist fights, you know, hypothetically and physically he gets into on a daily basis with his work.
So Sam, I don't know if you guys got questions for Sam for that, but I think we need to go protect him.
No.
I think that might be what it has to be. You got any questions for Sam?
I do. I have one quick question, Sam. So, you know, based on what you said and what you wrote in your articles, wouldn't the Republican fiscal policies be more aligned with the wealthy districts? And why are these wealthy districts blindly following the Democratic Party?
I honestly believe it's become such a team sport atmosphere in Washington, D.C. Every vote gets politicized really hard. You know, when I started 30 years ago on Capitol Hill as a staffer, the media environment was different. The attention Congress got was different. You know, there's a couple of maybe cable news shows that spent an hour or two covering Washington. Now, you know, you have X is wide open. And I think X did a lot for the party. It showed Americans kind of another side of the story that maybe takes a little longer to be told and can't be done in a 5 or 6 minute soundbite on, you know, CNN or some of the major cable news outlets and the major outlets. But it's just become such a team sport that, you know, one side gets their talking points and they generally fall in line and the other one does too. And they're not debating policy as they used to. You know, there used to be a whole process to the committee process in Congress, which builds things through to get to the House floor, to get the Senate floor to be passed. That process has completely broken down over partisanship. And they used to accuse Republicans of playing politics more often than Democrats. What's been enlightening now is, you know, you see DHS is unfunded. And while Democrats are protecting the filibuster and talking about how that's going to, you know, ruin all the norms and the things that kept the Senate sacrosanct, those same Democrats that are voting no to keep DHS funded are hiding behind the filibuster, which they're also being protected by. So it's either one party's in complete control, which is an argument they're making, or a minority, 41 votes, can stop just about anything. And the media is starting to turn a little bit, I think, because of X, but the environment that we're in, the attention that's being paid, the money that's being spent in Washington has made it really difficult to get anything done for either side. You know, Biden got one or two things done. Trump got his tax cuts through. But it is very difficult to find bipartisan accomplishment these days. The key is to take away the reasons to be against something. And I think if you start looking at everything through a class spectrum, you know, lens rather than an ideological one, you can build unique coalitions. The Congressional Black Caucus, for example, that's you know, every black member of Congress is a member of the Black Caucus. That's the single poorest congressional caucus in all of Washington, in all of Congress. If we can find ways to get the Freedom Caucus, which is the most conservative caucus in Washington, aligned with the Black Caucus on issues over class, not ideology, you could see them voting in their economic best interests, because the Freedom Caucus is the second poorest caucus in Washington. And that's obviously our friends. Yeah. So, you know, in a weird way, the Black Caucus and the Freedom Caucus have one thing that is very much in common. They represent the Americans in this country.
We can call it the Black Freedom Caucus. No, that doesn't work. Yep. it's shocking how tribal things have gotten, how it is a team sport. And that is, it's awful for Americans, because you get people in there and nothing happens for the everyday American. And that drives people bananas. The Democrats are screaming that you have the House, you have the Senate Republicans, and you have the presidency. Why can't you get something done? Because you won't get, you need that 60 vote threshold in the Senate. They can stop it. The filibuster, all the stuff you said. So hopefully we're going to find a way. Maybe that's it. Maybe creating those classes, sort of those class based alliances will help. But the truth is, it just seems like common knowledge. I mean, like common sense. You're supposed to be there to be working for the American people. And for some reason, the politics gets in the way and causes trouble. Trey, you got anything else?
I think the SAVE Act is a perfect example.
Oh, it's like
85-15, you know, 80-20 issue, whatever you want to break it down.
Right.
Like, there's just be zero reason why that cannot get across the finish line, you know, with a well over 60 votes in the Senate. So.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Yeah. What do you think, Sam? SAVE Act, perfect example?
Yeah, I mean, it's become all about you know, how they'll perform on election day. I think Democrats look at it like it could hurt them, but then in the same breath, they say there are no illegals voting, so there's nothing to fix.
No election fraud going on.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing ever all day.
Right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, unfortunately, it's become very, very political. Both parties are going to die on that hill. And what's been so satisfying as a conservative Republican for 30 years, who's been told that this is a return to Jim Crow, this is a racist policy, you know, you see the polling numbers coming out and, you know, 80% of Black Americans are totally fine showing an identification to vote, and they think it's valid and reasonable. So, you know, you've taken away, and that's kind of part of what the job is to take away reasons to be opposed. If the constituency you're saying you're protecting doesn't feel like they need to be protected, then who is Chuck Schumer and the Democrats really fighting for here? Is this a return to Jim Crow? Is this bigoted? Is this racist? Or is this just partisan politics getting in the way? And
TDS.
Because of
that, that's what I was going to go with. It's TDS, Sam. It's what we were talking about to begin the show. Trump derangement syndrome. Boy, I've never seen anybody on this planet have such a, I don't want to say the word target because he's obviously had two assassination attempts, but it's incredible how much they just go after specifically him. And you hear from the protesters on the streets at the No Kings rallies, you know, what has he done that makes him a king? Lots of things. It's like they don't have a single thing that they're actually talking about. They just hear it from the mainstream media, and that it becomes partisan politics, and it drives me absolutely bananas when I hear it.
You know, I'm in New York, and for 30 years, I've heard Daniel Patrick Moynihan and Al D'Amato and Mayor Koch and Mayor Dinkins and Kathy Hochul and Spitzer, all of them, you know, Schumer, all of them, talk about the need for the super connector from New York City to New Jersey, and it's like $1 trillion worth of spend. Trump says, you can have it, but I'm going to put my name on it. And all of a sudden, they become opposed. And it's like, for 30 years, you've been telling us we need this $1 trillion bridge and tunnel system to make every constituent in New York City, you know, have a more pleasant life. They've been fighting for it their entire careers. And then, you know, Trump's like, you can have it, but I need my name on it. And they're calling him an egomaniac for wanting his name on it. And it's like, okay, I understand your frame or your lens, but maybe he's just shining a mirror on the opponent's egomaniacal kind of side.
Of course, he is. He is the master. He is the master troller in chief. He has got. I mean, that's so funny. You can have it, but it's got to put my name on it. Their heads explode. And like, it's brilliant. I mean, if you're smart, you're caring for your constituents. You do it. Sure. Call it whatever you want to call it, but you're serving Americans, serving people things. But the fact that I think it's brilliant. It's part of his absolute genius and his wicked sense of humor, but they don't get it. They just call him an egomaniac. And he's brilliantly funny.
I honestly believe it's the same with the Trump Kennedy Center. Does anyone really believe that if Gavin Newsom wins in 2028, Donald Trump believes his name will still be on the Trump Kennedy Center?
First of all, bite your tongue, sir. Never say those words out loud. It's like saying Voldemort. You can't do that. I pray to God there's no way that Gavin Newsom gets even close. And I hope his wife and keeps talking on podcasts because she is extremely unlikable and it makes them more unlikable. Can I ask one last thing from you, Sam, before we let you go? Did you see the Academy Awards this year?
No, I haven't watched
that in a
long time.
Nobody did at all. But Javier Bardem had a saying, he had a Free Palestine pin on. Nobody challenged him on it. Nobody said anything. I always say, you know, they say from the river to the sea. They don't know which river. They don't know what sea. They don't know what they're talking about. They jump onto whatever it is. How does that make you feel when you see something like, and Javier Bardem is a great actor, but I don't agree with his politics. Free Palestine. How does it feel when you see something like that or hear something like that?
I know that he thinks he's doing it tastefully. You know, as a Washington citizen, I walk home from work and walk past the GW campus. I see the literature. I see the graffiti the protesters left behind. It wasn't as thoughtful. It wasn't as nice. You know, so the people protesting on campus at George Washington University, that's the school I walk past when I walk home, I see the graffiti they left. And it's horrifying. It would give my grandmother chills. So, you know, like there's a way that elites like to frame up, you know, their passion, their opposition. But then there's the way that, you know, the regular citizens that participate in it, you know, interpret it. And it's very different than the polite, I'm just wearing a button at the Academy Awards. It's graffiti that says kill Jews. Like, yeah. It's really that simple.
It's pretty straightforward.
So, yeah, it really does bother me. The things that they used to, that they still do accuse us of, they're enabling it as well. So I listened to Elise Slotkin for the first time ever. I heard a Democrat after the shooting in Detroit complain that, you know, there's right wing anti-Semitism and left wing anti-Semitism. I've never heard a Democrat admit that. It was we should be paying more attention to that. There is left wing anti-Semitism, and it's as bad as the right wing one. So, you know, like, as soon as we stop believing that, you know, half the country is sorted out between good and evil, and every Republican is supporting Darth Vader and the evil empire, and the Democrats are always aligned with the Rebel Alliance and they're wonderful people. Like, it's so much more nuanced than that. There's, you know, however many millions of people in this country, and neither party has, you know, a mandate for good versus bad. It's very complex. And I think that, you know, our clients have to navigate that, and we try to help them. But it's just way more confusing, and it's all on X now. And Elon, by buying X, just kind of showed the world, you know, what else is out there. And it changed news. It changed the way I think a lot of people are perceiving politics these days. Podcasts, you know, you have the opportunity to get a real full thought across rather than a 3-minute snippet on CNN. That means they're less in control. They can't figure out how to, like, you know, spin a story about us that isn't true. And you go back to the story I started with, Wicked. We're not the bad guys. Actually, we feel like we've been bullied. Our constituents have been harmed by illegal immigration. There are crimes involved with illegals that are horrifying and depressing and sad. And they're not the bad people. They just want to be safe and secure. And there's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't make them bad.
All right, Sam Geduldig, I said it right, I hope, from CGCN. Thank you so much for your insight. We appreciate having you on today. And I am not going to go watch Wicked. I don't want to see it now. I just don't want to see it. Appreciate you, Sam. Thank you, sir.
Class dismissed.
Class dismissed. Man.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you, my friend. I never saw Wicked. Did you see it?
I have not. No.
I have not either.
No.
Okay.
Far other things I'd rather spend my time doing.
I can see Trey sitting down in Wicked. I don't see that happening. So that was really interesting.
Great. Yeah. I mean, the articles that they've done, these two articles, Class Dismissed 1 and 2, are excellent. There's some great research points in there. It really makes you think. And the points that Sam brought up today, really, it makes you question what you're even thinking politically, you know? So, and the left is really, you know, they're out of line. And I think that they should read these articles, and every American should read these articles. They're great.
You know, he talked about, Sam talked about the bullying and that sort of thing. Being a guy from Hollywood, having conservative political views, voicing them, Hollywood won't, you know, how do you say F you in Hollywood? Trust me. That's it. And you know, the thing is, they're also cowards out there. They won't tell you to your face, listen, we don't want to do this because you're a conservative, or we don't agree with your political values or whatever it is, but they quietly do it on the outskirts. Also, I had a Comic-Con actually say that we don't want Dean to come to this Comic-Con because we don't agree with his values, or I don't represent the values of that Comic-Con, which was ridiculous. And I exposed them on X, which became a big deal. And that's the kind of bullying that Sam was talking about. And it's crazy. Sam, I see you're still hanging around there, brother. You don't have to be. They've got you there. They could boot you. You can go on with your day, or we can just watch you, which is also fine with me, which is great.
He wants to tune into the show and get an early edition of it. So.
But he did mention X and Elon buying X, and I can't. That is so huge. I've said it many times before. Elon Musk, by buying X and saving free speech, has changed the world, much the way that I think, you know, President Trump is changing the world with the way he's realigning everything. The ability to get news out there unfiltered, to speak your mind, to throw videos up. I used to wake up in the morning, you know, there's a time I would get the paper and read the, you know, have some coffee. Well, the paper's gone, so I used to get on the internet and check the news. Now I just go right on, you know, you go to a particular site or something. Now I go right to X.
Yeah.
And I go to see what's going on right now, because it'll happen right now. It's amazing. It changed the way news works. It changed the way everything else happens. So Elon, if you're watching, first of all, thank you. Yeah. And secondly, God bless you. It's amazing. And also, we're going to the moon, by the way, guys. Again, we're going around the moon. I just want to throw that out there.
How exciting is that?
It wasn't Elon doing that. This is NASA, but yeah. Everything has something to do with Elon,
yeah,
I believe.
Of course. He's what an exciting thing. My kids watched it, you know, live yesterday. It was fantastic. So,
but doesn't that feel like Americana?
It's America's back.
Yeah.
That's what it means. America 100%. Is back.
Yeah. You know, yeah, we're going back to the moon. I don't want to get into the did we fake the moon landing thing. I stay out of that. We're going to solve that right now by these guys going a little further than I think Apollo 13 or 11. Who went? One of those went 248,000 miles away. We're going 250. We're going to do one more. We're going to get one more than that. It is exciting. And it does feel like, you know, we're Norman Rockwell, you know, JFK, we're going to do, America's going to the moon. We're doing these things. And it's an exciting, exciting time without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I hope that the astronauts by the time, I guess, but you know, they'll still be up there. It's a 10-day trip.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about this as I went to sleep last night. I was like, man, I'm here cozy in my little bed. And those guys are in a rocket going, you know, whatever, 58 million miles, who knows what the speed is. I mean, Elon knows, but, and they're in these little cats. I mean, where they are, what they're doing is shocking, but it makes me proud again to be an American.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic. Now, who else we got on today? We got Jen Pellegrino,
yep.
And we got Matt Schlapp. Mm-hmm. We got all kinds of good folks on today. Are we close to having, we have Jen.
Dean, real quick, one point I wanted to make about the bullying, especially against the vile left, against conservatives. I think when you open the episode talking about the Trump derangement syndrome, I think one of the lead causes of the Trump derangement syndrome is Trump hits back.
And that
decades, the Republican Party did not hit back against the vile left, and Trump just gets up there and throws haymakers, and that definitely contributes to the level of Trump derangement syndrome. They were not used to that whatsoever. Yeah,
they
absolutely despise it, though. Yeah. They were not used to that.
He's a counterpuncher, but he counterpunches with a freaking brick in his hand, man. Yeah. He doesn't mess around with that.
I kind of believe half, you know, a significant amount of the Democrats out there have never been punched in the face before, for real.
Like the Mike Tyson analogy.
Figurative and literal.
Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. So.
That's right.
It's the same thing I used to watch on the football field. Guys would get out there, we practice all week, we're great. They get in the first game and someone just smacks them in the face and their eyes just go huge. You're like, I'm sure you've seen that in combat. I'm sure you've seen that out in the field plenty. There's a moment. And Trump is good for that moment. He gets shot in the ear, almost gets his head taken off. What does he say? Fight.
Yep.
That's right.
Amazing. And I said, give me my shoes, which is pretty, wow. I mean, listen, you've seen what you have seen in battle and in war and what people do. How do people normally react to getting shot?
It depends on the individual a lot. Yeah.
And training too, right? Like, I mean, you guys are trained. If you were to take a round you know, you fight, you continue and stay in the fight. Right. But President Trump, who has never been trained, you know,
It's a natural,
military or domestic law enforcement tactical training. You're never going to rise to the occasion. You're going to fall back to your level of training that you have, that 10,000 rep kind of analogy in, you know, so as much good as you are with that, you know, the 10,000 perfect reps, that's how you're going to react when the situation dictates.
And Trump had zero training, but he reacted like a champ and said, fight. Mm-hmm. Amazing, iconic. Incredible. Okay. Speaking of amazing, iconic, and incredible, we have the lovely Miss Jen Pellegrino from Defend Forgotten America. That is us. We are Forgotten America, Jen. Lovely to see you. How are you today?
Hey, it's great to be with you. And thanks for having me, Dean and everybody. I'm doing great. Just so happy to see you after a great meeting at CPAC.
Yeah, well, CPAC was quite a wonderful, wonderful event. We're going to have Matt Schlapp on in a little bit to talk about it. But it was absolutely strange to be in a gathering of conservative people everywhere, American flags all over the place, and so many smiles.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing. You know, I've always looked forward to going to CPAC. I've been the last several years, both in Washington, down in Florida during COVID, and most recently, of course, in Texas. And you always get a great crowd of people there that are so patriotic, that love this country, that want the best for it. You have a lot of voices, obviously, from, you know, the big, loud influencers and podcasters and political stars to people from middle America, what I represent with Defend Forgotten America, people in flyover country who just want to have their voices heard. So it's always a lot of fun to be at CPAC, to hear what everybody has to say, all the differing opinions. And it's a great event that I know a lot of people look forward to every year.
I love you called it flyover country. I don't love that you called it flyover country because that is us. We are, that's the homeland. And that's what we are. That is what makes America, America. You ever see that? There's that comedian guy who says, you know, America's got something that nobody else has. That's why we're unbeatable in war. Rednecks. And he goes through it. It's one of the funniest bits, and it's a great bit. But that's America. That is the homeland, and that's what we love to talk about every single day. Michael, I know you're writing over there furiously. You got something to say?
I was going to bring it up a little bit later, but one thing I wanted to point out that nobody's talked about with CPAC, Jen. And Jen, great to have you here. It's good to see you again.
By the way, aren't there prettier girls on the conservative side? I'm just going to throw it out there. Sorry, wow. I don't mean to mess up the whole conversation. Michael, please go again.
All right, you know, I can just exit here. Yeah. It's okay. I could probably find somebody else to stand in.
Yeah. No, first of all, Jen,
first lady's busy today.
The energy levels at CPAC, as you mentioned, were through the roof. Right? Everybody was super excited. It was bright. It was loud, and just truly high energy levels. But one thing a lot of people have failed to mention was the contingents of the Iranians that were there supporting CPAC and supporting the Conservative Party. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, that speaks to what we see a lot right now in general with the media. There's so much that's not mentioned. They want to focus on conflicts because that's what gets ratings, whether it's within the administration, within our movement. That's the general focus. And I think making us all out to be a lot more divided than we are right now. They don't want to focus on that support, at least in the legacy media. And so I think that is something important that you pointed out, Mike, that didn't get enough coverage.
Yeah, for sure. And it was everywhere. And they were great. We were all talking and they were approaching our booth and really excited about what we're doing here at Proud American Studios. So, you know, it was an honor to really meet some amazing people from different parts of the world.
Jen, real quick, defend forgotten America. So how I had my take on what it was. It's the homeland for us. It's flyover country. Tell me about your organization. Tell me a little bit more about it.
So we're really focused on rural and small urban America. So where I came from, I was born and raised in upstate New York, 20 minutes from the Canadian border, very rural part of the country, the closest airport to my hometown, 2 hours away, a lot of farmland, a lot of dairy farmers, blue collar, hardworking people, very conservative part of New York State, unlike what you hear coming out of New York City. It's two different places within that state. But that's what we focus on, places like that. You know, I think about the people that I met when I was a journalist covering all the Trump rallies across this country, across two elections, and the people that would come up to me with tears in their eyes saying, we have to win this election. You know, this president, he speaks to us. He understands us. He sees us. They're so concerned about losing that. And, you know, having been in Washington for over 15 years now, being, you know, in front of the camera as a news anchor, out in the field, and then also just kind of seeing how the swamp operates, I realized that these people, while President Trump has given them a voice, you know, unfortunately, he's not going to be around forever. And I think, you know, we want to make sure that continues, that these people whose voices have been forgotten by Washington are heard. So what we do is we get out there in the states and we're focused on, you know, turning their conversation, their concerns into meaningful policy changes, looking at what's happening with rural hospitals closing, for example. You know, if a hospital closes, you know, that's the backbone of a lot of these communities. You're losing jobs, you're losing access to healthcare, of course. There's a lot that comes of that. And you know, if you drive through a lot of rural parts of the country, they've seen better days, unfortunately, and we hope to change that.
That is gigantic and huge. And everyone, you know, that's the thing about a hospital or doctors, you know, or Navy SEALs or HSI agents is you don't appreciate them until you need them. And then, boy, it's a big deal. You said upstate New York. I just want to remind you that, first of all, you hopefully you're a Buffalo Bills fan. And I played for the Buffalo Bills for about 15 minutes. Not that I'm trying to hit on you or anything during the podcast. I'm just telling you. I was a Buffalo Bill. I love the upstate New York area.
I appreciate that. I'm a South Carolina Gamecock. So unfortunately, that's my college football is more my thing than pro. But, you know, it's tough being a Gamecock fan. I'll say that. We have our ups and downs.
Well, I've still got to stand up for my Buffalo Bills. I got to stand up for them. South Carolina, you guys had a pretty good year last year, but you kind of blew it in the end. Mm-hmm. Not gonna call names typical. Here. So how do you see, Jen? How do you see? We started the show talking about TDS, absolute Trump derangement syndrome, and people have lost their minds. If he cured cancer, they'd be angry that he put cancer doctors out of business. With your organization and where you've been and the things you've seen, how do you feel about that? What do you think's going on in that world? The way the media portrays everything that President Trump does as something negative or that he failed or it's a failure. The murder rate drops and they're like, oh my gosh, he's an awful failure.
Well, you've seen how it's played out for the media, Dean. You look at polling over the last several years and their credibility is in the tank. It wasn't great to begin with, but it's going lower and lower and people are changing the channel. They're looking to alternative sources. They're looking to independent journalists even. I mean, you look what Nick Sorter did in Minnesota and other, you know, other places. Nick Shirley, I'm sorry. And this is what's changing the landscape right now for people. There's a lot of TDS out there. I see it. Unfortunately, the left, of course, is not as tolerant as they claim to be. But, I think a lot of people are looking to where the truth is. And they're looking to podcasts like yours, Dean, where people are having real conversation and not, giving all this nonsense just to fit a narrative. You see how much is left out of the media's coverage right now. And that's where really people should be looking.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Now, so as a conservative woman in this field, I left Hollywood and I got attacked all the time and they were saying awful things about me and this and that because I was a conservative actor in Hollywood. What's it like being a conservative broadcaster and media personality? Do you feel like you get attacked for being that? Because I see the way they go after people, they're like, oh, there she is with their blonde hair and her big, beautiful smile. And isn't that awful? I mean, what's your experience?
Well, first, I just have to say I have so much respect for you, Dean, and standing up the way you did. I know it's not easy being somebody from Hollywood. You're putting a lot on the line there and coming out in terms of your values and beliefs. And I respect you for doing that. Listen, it can be hard at times. You have to have a thick skin. I think when I was an anchor, I couldn't always read the Twitter comments. There were some really nasty things out there. But that being said, too, there's a lot of great people within this movement, and I'm glad to be on the other side of it now where I can be more open with my own views because they've just embraced me and they've been incredible. And you go to CPAC and you go to other events and they're amazing people. But I will say back in the days when I was in the briefing room in President Trump's first administration during COVID, during those daily briefings, they were so nasty in that room. I can think back to other journalists in air quotes here, but they stick a ladder in front of me because, I was invited to be in that room. The White House Correspondents Association didn't want us in there because I was with a conservative outlet. So I was standing to the side, invited by the press secretary. They'd stick a ladder in front of me. They'd try to do anything they could to block the president from seeing me when he was at that podium. They're a nasty crowd. Some of those folks in the media and on the left, but it's important for us to be out there and have our voices heard because we know the left certainly is very vocal.
Yeah, they are. And I always find that the meanest people out there, I find leftists to say some of the nastiest, mm-hmm. awful, most horrific yeah. things ever. And it's shocking. We're so mm-hmm. tolerant. We're so, we care so much and we're inclusive. You're not inclusive of people who have a different opinion and it's horrific. And I've seen plenty of that. So getting back out to rural America and the beauty of rural America, I find people don't understand, what it's like in rural America. If you're just in New York or in LA and you're doing a whole situation, give me any sort of story about rural America and what you're doing out there and the things that you see or the people you speak with.
I speak with a lot of people across various industries, everyday average Americans that
again, you know, they're out there in middle America. The president stopped by for rallies during the times he was campaigning. But here they are now feeling very isolated. You know, these are the voices that need to be heard, but they're not being amplified by the legacy media. They don't, you know, they're not focusing on them. It's all about the big cities and what's happening within the administration. So it's our goal to get out there and amplify more of that. You know, I think some of the great stories that I've heard are the ones that are, you know, hospital groups that I speak to in the middle of nowhere in Ohio, where, you know, they've received assistance from the administration. They've gotten attention because they had issues in keeping, you know, their healthcare systems operating. And they're doing such a great job at that. They're serving their communities. They're finding ways to innovate. I had a conversation with somebody recently that said, you know, we want to make, you know, world-class healthcare available in rural America. And that's huge because, you know, I think back to where I grew up and, you know, you knew you had to go probably 3 hours if you wanted to get really good healthcare, if you had a serious issue that had to be taken care of. Imagine if we get to a place where people don't have to do that. They don't have to drive. It's right there in their backyard where they know they can get taken care of. And that'll be huge if we can get to that point. And there are small groups around the country that are doing that. And so those are some of the stories that I love to hear from people that are finding ways to build these communities that, you know, were, gosh, 50 years ago, were a great place to live. And you didn't see young people leaving them to go to our big cities.
50 years ago, I wasn't alive. Okay, I was very much alive 50 years ago. I was almost a 10-year-old. I was almost at the double digits.
Well, I say 50 years ago, and I'm thinking that's like the 1950s, you know, when my parents were growing up. So, you know, just like the 80s were 20 years ago. That's where we are now.
No, the 80s were yesterday. They were absolutely
Thank
yesterday.
You.
Yeah. Dean, if I might add, Jen, first of all, great seeing you again from meeting you at CPAC last week. But for me, what you're doing, that especially hits home because I was born and raised in a small town in rural northeast Missouri, less than 2,300 people. And the nearest hospital, there was one across the river in Illinois, about 20, 25 minutes away. And my sister still lives back in my hometown area, and she actually works at the hospital. So I know exactly the daily struggles they deal with, still trying to stay afloat compared to some of the bigger, metropolitan areas. But I really do appreciate, you know, from a personal standpoint, everything you're doing with your organization, because it hits home to me big time. Growing up in a small, tight-knit community and leaving 9 days out of high school to join the military, still keep in contact with a lot of folks. So yeah, keep doing great things like you're doing.
Well, God bless you and God bless your sister for serving the community. Listen, I thought at one point I wanted to get somewhere in the healthcare space. I could never do it, but I have so much respect for people that are in there and taking care of people every day. It's a tough job, a lot of hours, not a lot of thanks for what they do, and it's greatly appreciated.
I will say, not to go down this rabbit hole, the Obamacare changes. I think rural hospitals and rural healthcare were affected far worse than what meets the eye, you know, when you start talking to rural America.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The ACA was an absolute, complete, horrendous disaster. It's his legacy. I hope it gets fixed or thrown in the trash or whatever it is. And I think that the current administration seems like they're on the road to fix it. I mean, President Trump is about solutions, and I don't think Washington has had a lot of solutions to their problems. I think they enjoy kicking the can down the road, getting their money, their power, whatever they're doing, but they don't seem to want to have solutions. And I think that's why there's so much pushback against President Trump, because he's trying to solve the issues. He's actually trying to solve the problems. Jen, before we let you go, what is your Defend Forgotten America is the name of your company, but what is your hope for America in these next 3 years and beyond?
I hope we can see more unity. You know, like we saw, I always think back to right after 9/11 and how the country was so united, so patriotic. And I think we're a lot more united than the legacy media would like everybody to believe. But we do have a long way to go. It just breaks my heart when I see people that are trashing the American flag, when I see athletes that are kneeling for the national anthem, when I see people turning their backs on this country. We live in the greatest country in the world, and we need to celebrate that, especially as this is the 250th anniversary of this great nation. And we're going to celebrate big time in our nation's capital. I know this administration is planning for that as well.
Yeah, it's going to be bigly planning for it.
You know, where everybody's hugging that American flag like President Trump did at CPAC several years ago in that iconic moment. That's what I hope for.
I love that, Jen. Jen Pellegrino from Defend Forgotten America. I don't think anybody's going to forget you. I think America will not forget you, Jen. We won't, for sure. Appreciate having you on. Thank you so very, very much.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Outstanding. America's 250th. She hit on it. Love America. Support America. The greatest country ever, ever in the history of history, of everything. There's been, never been a country like this. And this 250th is going to be quite a celebration. Trump does things big. And I think this is going to be big.
Yep.
Dean, if I might add again, I think one of the biggest points that irked me recently is during the No Kings protest, when I saw protesters flipping off U.S. military helicopters. That just shows your true colors right there. And just the vile nature. Like, they hate domestic law enforcement. They hate the military. They hate everything this country stands for, and we need to stop them. That's what we're here talking about, the issues we're talking about today.
Then we have Kid Rock, who, salutes the helicopter in the backyard.
Yeah.
You know, how outstanding was that moment?
The tale of two Americans, let me tell you.
Yeah, so people didn't, if you're not aware of what happened there at home, Kid Rock was out in his Tennessee, balcony, which looked pretty dope, and he has a nice, he's got a Statue of Liberty out there. I mean, Kid Rock, I bless him to death. Yeah. And he, he's right in the sort of the Fort Campbell flight path there. So he sees all these helicopters come by, and he goes there and does things all the time with them. And he was out on his, out by his pool, and they stopped by and gave him a what's up.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently those guys got in trouble at first.
Initially, yeah.
And then I think Secretary Hegseth came in and straightened stuff out.
We've talked in the past about rural America and small town USA, like where you're from, Trey. And a lot of those small communities, especially in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, they rely very heavily on like the fossil fuel industry, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these are mining towns and all this. And, under the Biden administration, when they want to ship the pipeline, ship all the fossil fuels, get rid of it, go to clean energy, it really had an impact on these small communities. Mm-hmm. We had Daniel Turner on from Power of the Future once and one of our other podcasts that spoke very eloquently about that. But and then there's a black hole. These people all lose their jobs. There's no income in these small towns. Mm-hmm. And you see the fentanyl, you see the methamphetamine, you see the drugs, you see the social problems that enter into these towns because they're literally left with nothing. So it's just a point that I wanted to make that, we really need to, as a government on both sides of the aisle, to really take that into consideration when we're making.
I mean, to add on, Mike, what you're saying, well, the area I was from was agriculture community. So obviously, farm equipment obviously is powered by diesel fuel. So when the price of diesel fuel and other fossil fuel spikes, it has a ripple effect across the entire economy with commodity prices, grain prices, livestock prices, you name it. So yeah, those rural America farmers really struggle when it comes to issues like that. For the globe, the decisions that are made in Washington will have that ripple effect down to even the smallest communities throughout the United States.
And everyone's screaming right now about the gas prices and they're going up a little because of this situation in Iran. Mm. It's very, very temporary. Mm. Take a little bit of temporary discomfort to get rid of the world's number one state sponsor of terror and find peace break out in the Middle East. And on that note, peace in the Middle East, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back after this. And welcome back to the homeland here on Proud American Studios. I'm Dean Kane with Trey Lindsay, Michael Koselniak, and we are talking about all things truth, justice, and the American way. Yes, we are patriots through and through. And when we went to the break, we were talking about the Iran conflict and the situation going on there. President Trump spoke the other night, and he tried to put some perspective on this conflict. He said World War I was almost 2 years of us fighting. World War III, I'm sorry, World War II, don't jump ahead of myself. World War II, almost 4 years. Korean War, almost over 3 years. The Vietnam War, over 19 years. Iraq, almost 9 years. We've been in Iran for 1 month, 32, 33, 35 days, something like that at this point in time. And we have absolutely decimated them. And all you hear about, you hear from the mainstream media, oh my gosh, Iran is winning. They're in a great position. What are you talking about? They are not. And the biggest thing we hear about here at home, screaming about, from the left is gas prices are up for a minute. for a minute, and they're not even, I mean, I think they're higher under Obama and certainly under Biden, but they're up for a short period of time while this conflict, you get rid of the world's number one state sponsor of terrorism, get peace in the Middle East. And Trey, we were talking about this a second ago, and you had a wonderful saying that I will defer to you now.
So Dean, when we were talking on the break, folks, one of my senior enlisted leaders, probably the best one I had in my former life in the military. He had a phrase he used quite often, said, there's always a cost. And sometimes the cost of not doing something is far greater than the cost of doing something, not necessarily measured in dollars and cents either. So again, folks are going to be complaining about a temporary rise in fuel prices. What do you think would happen if Iran did get a nuclear weapon? They put on one of their ICBMs, they launched it to Europe, they launched it somewhere else in other Middle Eastern countries. What does people think on the left would happen to fuel prices or even the world economy then if a nuclear warhead got launched by the Iranian regime? Like, what's the cost of that at that point in time with everything, the world economy for that matter?
It would be astronomical and insane. It would be like Armageddon. Mm-hmm. But of course, they don't have any missiles that go over 2,000 miles. Oh, wait.
Except for the ones they shot at Diego Garcia. So.
4,000 miles. That means it can hit London. It can hit Paris. It can hit anywhere in Europe.
But it's not, the European leader said it's not their war. It's not their fight.
Oh,
until
it is,
that happened. Yeah,
that
kind of changed the dialogue, the narrative, just a little bit.
It's 100% your fight, Europe. And most of the oil that comes through the Strait of Hormuz is coming through and going to either Asia or to Europe. By the way, did you see that there's somebody online who was trolling people at the, I think it was in New York City. He was like, why do they call this the Strait of Hormuz? It's not for the gays. It's for the, why do they call it? It should be the gays of Hormuz. And people were agreeing with him. I love satire is so important to be able to poke fun at the powers that be. I mean, I've been satirized. I take it as a badge of honor. And it's so important. But why is the Strait of Hormuz? It should be the gay of Hormuz. That's my character. I was doing my version of it.
Yeah, not just a satire. I think it exposes people more than anything.
Their
lack of knowledge. I remember one of the gals' response, like, oh, yeah, I could be really supportive. It was called the gays of Hormuz versus the Strait of Hormuz. And I just watched this video scratching my head. It's like, I mean, her vote counts just as much as mine does, your does, Mike's does, everybody else's vote here does. But, hey, that's the democracy we live in.
Yes, we're the republic. We're not a democracy.
We're a constitutional republic.
I always get hard on that one. Yeah. It's like, I gotta put my fist down. Well, only because people talk about it all the time. And the speech that I gave at CPAC, if you guys watched my speech, did you? It was
fun. Oh, yeah.
But I said, democracy, a pure democracy is always, it's two wolves and a lamb deciding what's for dinner. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be the lamb. Mm-hmm. And that's it. The majority doesn't rule. You know, our constitution is to protect the rights of the individual first. And that makes us unique. And that gives us all the freedom in the world. And we're all for smaller government. And those are the reasons that this nation is the greatest nation in the history of the world. And why people are fighting to come here. Okay. You don't see people, we don't build a wall to keep people in. We build a wall to protect, those who are inside. Mm-hmm. What is the saying about a locked door? I don't lock my door at night because I hate the people who are outside. I hate it because I love the people who are inside. Mm-hmm. And those are the people I'm trying to protect.
Well said, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. All right. So we're going to get Matt Schlapp in a minute to run over our entire CPAC adventure. And it was an adventure. And I think, I don't know, what was the highlight for you, Michael?
Just seeing the people and the energy and everybody there all supporting one conservative view. Mm-hmm. I thought it was excellent. One thing that I meant to mention this earlier is the Star Spangled Banner played at the beginning of each day. And I looked around. I was very proud, as serving my country and somebody who loves this country deeply, was very proud to see every person at attention, every person staring at that flag. I don't know if that would be the same if we were, on the other side and if there'd be people sitting down or taking a knee during our Star-Spangled Banner. But I have to say, there wasn't one person in the building that wasn't standing and fully focused on what was going on. It was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, that is a gorgeous thing. I saw something on the Internet of Things the other day, and there was a couple of girls filming themselves during the playing of the national anthem at a baseball game or at a basketball game or something. And they were like, attitude that they weren't there. Look at us not standing and being respectful for the flag. And you do live in the United States of America and you have that right. but we also have the right to call you names if you do so. And for somebody like you, Trey, who mm-hmm. has bled for the flag and lost brothers and sisters and friends, and how does that make you feel when you see something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting. It really is. You know, if you hate the United States so much, move to another country. Like, that's when you know you live in the greatest country in the world, is when people talk about how much they hate this country, they hate the flag, but yet they refuse to leave. That's when you know, folks, you live in the greatest country in the world.
Yeah, you know, you could go somewhere else if you want to. We don't keep you here. We're a free country. You can take off. Mm-hmm. Gays for Gaza, go for it. I mean, you're going to learn to fly real quickly, and it's not going to be a great landing. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people in America, I've been to 53, 56 countries. I can't count. And some of those countries have changed over the years. That was a country. Now mm-hmm. it's not a country. But I've been all over the world. I travel forever. And man, if you don't get outside of the United States, you don't see the way other people live and the way other things, the existence of it's the most mm-hmm. eye-opening thing mm-hmm. you'll ever see. That's why it's funny when, you know, Rosie O'Donnell moves to Ireland, which is a first world country. Mm-hmm. I think, did she move back?
I think she's trying to, but I think, yeah.
Trump has stopped it. Yeah. He has put his foot down and he said, no, absolutely not. But I mean, you've been to a couple countries, Trey. What are your thoughts on some of the finer aspects of...
It definitely will make you appreciate being an American and spend as much time overseas in various countries. All over Europe, Asia, obviously the Middle East, African countries. You learn to appreciate being a U.S. citizen.
Tremendously, not mm-hmm. just all the resources and things we have here, but the Constitution mm-hmm. and capitalism. These are the things that allow us to thrive and have the greatest country in the history of mankind.
Completely agree. I've done a lot of traveling overseas myself, and I cannot wait to get back to my home here in the United States. Can't wait. Some beautiful places in the world. It's great to go travel and go see what they have. But then when you start to see the structure of their governments or the rights that they have or don't have, it's United States is where it's at.
I have come home from being overseas, and it's cliche to say it, but I have literally kissed the ground. I was able to go visit our troops in Iraq in 2005. That was the longest 17 days of my life. I didn't expect it to be what it was to see the life over there and the way our men and women were living and the situations they were. I mean, I slept in the same barracks and the places a lot of young kids and people mm-hmm. doing that, man. When I first got there, I went to Kuwait and then we traveled into country. And even when I was in Kuwait, you know, it was liberated, but there was a lot of different folks around. When I finally got over and saw a bunch of American soldiers, I'll tell you what, there's a feeling you're in a foreign country, you're in a war zone, you're in danger. And then you see American troops as an American. I would have done weird things to just love on them because mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. so happy to see them. And you just look at each other and I was like, man, I love you, man. It's incredible. It's incredible. So that, I don't know if you've ever experienced things like that. I mean, the things you've seen, and I don't even want to start. I do want to start. Actually, I'd love to ask you a million questions about that, but it's just to give you a real, true, absolute appreciation for the United States of America. And I love patriotism. I'm all about patriotism and supporting the United States. And yeah, you do have the right to not stand during the national anthem. You have the right to kneel. You can say what you want to. That's part of this being a free country. But we also have the right to call you names, and we might. Fair enough.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. All right. I know we're going to get Matt Schlapp soon. Do we have Matt on, or is that all working out? Not yet. We don't have Matt yet. But one of the things that I think was really amazing at CPAC, and I can't wait to ask Matt about this if we do get him, is we, and you touched on it, Michael, earlier, is Prince Reza Pahlavi being there. There was such a huge part of the Iranian diaspora here in the United States is very strong. Mm-hmm. 1979, people bolted out. One of my best friends, his whole family got out of there. He was actually going to be drafted into the Iranian armed forces because they did it by birthdays. And his father was a doctor, and one of his patients, that he would do a lot of pro bono work. One of his patients said, hey, what's your boy's birthday again? And he was like, I forgot what it was exactly. Sorry, buddy. Yeah, I apologize. I don't remember your birthday. It's April 19th or something. And he goes, mm-hmm. His name is coming up. Mm-hmm. So boom, my buddy got out of there as an 11-year-old or 12-year-old. I don't know how old he was, but he got out of there. Else he was going to be cannon fodder, you know, in that war. And then, of course, everybody bolted out. And I've seen so many people here. I'm fortunate enough to have met Ali, to met Reza Pahlavi before. I went to college with his little brother at Princeton. Yes, I did. I went to Princeton, believe it or not. An actor who went to Princeton. I was 15 years ahead of Pete Hegseth, our Secretary of War, and 5 years ahead of Senator Ted Cruz, two people who we will have on this show very soon, fine Princetonians and fine Americans. But I had the chance to meet Reza Pahlavi and speak with him a long time ago before all this sort of broke out. And I'd really be interested to hear what he has to say now. It's what do you think is going to happen at this point in time? We've decapitated, you know, three levels of leadership at this point in time. The Mojtaba, whatever his name, we've never seen him. Does he really exist or whatever? What do you see happening? President Trump's talking about it. We're coming down to a close in this. We've hit all of our most of our objectives. Mm-hmm. What do you see happening? Do you think it's going to be somebody from within? Do you think it's going to be Reza Pahlavi from without? I mean, it's up in the air at this point in time.
Yeah. It's such a really hard question to answer because it's not going to be a forever war.
Yeah, the next several weeks will not tell a forever war.
I will say that. The next several weeks, how much of a fight the Iranian regime still puts up. And then also even from the pro-American Iranians from within the country, if they have a rising, you know, the very, very good possibility they'll put, you know, their leader in charge at that point.
But they don't have a Second Amendment, so nobody's got firearms.
That is true. That's the only problem.
Mm-hmm. And you see that. You saw that in Venezuela.
You saw that in January when there was over, you know, estimated 20 to 30 plus thousand Iranians that were killed during some of the protests.
Yeah. Had they been armed, mm-hmm. it'd be a different ball of wax. And again, the Second Amendment isn't only just to protect you and your house. It's to protect against a tyrannical government. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, nobody wants to invade the United States. Mm-hmm. I don't want to try to invade your house. That's not happening. I think there'd be booby traps before I got even in anywhere near anything like that.
Our two Belgian Malinois would alert us before you even got close to the door as well. So
you have two Belgian Malinois?
Oh, yeah, we got two Maloraptors.
They are Maloraptors, man. I have done a lot of dog strikes and things like that in law enforcement, and I did a couple movies like that. You have to work those dogs.
Yeah.
Like, they're psycho, but psycho phenomenal. They're Navy SEALs.
They're saying that, like, with Malinois owners, we have a saying, like, you have to give them a job or they're going to find a job. And the job they find may not be the one you want them to find one way or the other.
There goes that couch.
Yeah.
And they're athletes, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are. I see stuff, you know, they always do those things on Instagram or whatever. They're like a Malinois jumping over the thing and grabbing something and falling 30 feet. And then they're like, and my dog, meep, you know, in the corner. It's embarrassing. But yeah, wow. Wow. So, what do you think, Michael? What's going to happen in Iran? And again, we're speculating. We don't know anything more than anybody else, but we sit out here and watch all the news and all the things. And we've been in for 30 something days and we've decapitated, you know, several layers of their leadership. People are rising up. If they get some internet, they get some ability to communicate, obviously that could change things. Or if the Kurds rise up, or if the diaspora does something, or the people within, what do you see happening?
So, I mean, just to point out, President Trump in his speech last night, I think it was great. He outlined his plan. He kind of gave a time frame, which I think was really important to the American people, right? 2 to 3 weeks, right? Could be longer, could be less, but he basically said, I see something in this hopefully coming to an end within the next few weeks. I think that really gave the American public peace. I think we all kind of know, because nobody wants to be there any longer than we necessarily have to, right? Nobody really wants boots on the ground. We don't want our troops to be put in harm's way. So that's why we're fighting this war right now in a way that's very, surgical, where it's all bombs. It's taking out their infrastructure, taking out their, you know, all their capabilities, whether it's launching of missiles and their radar capabilities and all those different various types of components that make
a government strong. He said the radar's gone.
Yeah.
He said the radar's gone.
So I think it's really important to point that out, that, you know, we have a time frame now, ballpark. You know, again, that's always flexible. Anything can happen. But I think it's really important for the American people to feel safe in that way.
Yeah. He didn't campaign on no forever wars is what he said. No forever wars. And this is not going to be a forever war. It's been remarkable. I can't wait till we get a chance to speak with Secretary Hegseth to discuss what has gone on, because it's been almost flawless. Yes, we've lost 13 soldiers, which is absolutely terrible. And God bless them and their families. We've paid them tremendous respect, and we'll continue to do so. Frank Siller, by the way, like 7 of those 13, he's already like, you know, tunnels to towers. Frank Siller, you were such a patriot, such a wonderful guy. He's already paid off their mortgages or something. I read that already. I mean, it's incredible. But this is not going to be a forever war. This is not that President Trump is way too cagey and crafty. And I don't think the gas prices are going to stay for long. Whenever there's something like this that comes up, he solves the problem. I think that they have, I think that they have planned for these contingencies. They've planned for what happens if X, Y, and Z. What happened? I mean, the media story where, you know, they hadn't considered the possibility of the Strait of Hormuz closing. What? Of course, we've been talking about it for 47 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. But they love to break down anything they can and sort of root against the United States, which is awful. Venezuela, you don't hear much about it anymore, do you? Mm-hmm. It's like that was the whole thing. Oh my gosh, Venezuela, basically a perfect military thing. Our one super stud soldier. God, that guy. Mm-hmm. That what do you remember his name?
No,
I can't remember his name, but he looks like Henry Cavill. He looks like he should be playing Superman. Bless you, sir. He got shot up, but still completed the mission. Unbelievable, but it was flawless. Mm-hmm. And what's going on in Iran is virtually flawless. I mean, it's not without huge risks, and it's almost becoming to where we expect it to be perfect and done in 3 weeks. And that's it's unheard of, but it speaks to how well we've done as a nation and as a military specifically. Secretary Hegseth has been fantastic. Admiral Cooper been great things. And of course, my non-family member, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Raisin Kane, not Dean Kane, no relation whatsoever, but a phenomenal job by our military. And I think we're going to wrap it up in the near future. Yeah.
Yes. Could I just add in one more quick thing?
Yes.
So one thing I forgot to mention, it kind of goes along with your point earlier. What the Democrats hate about Trump is why we're going to be effective in Iran. They hate the fact that he's a problem solver. They hate the fact that he gets it done. They hate the fact that he's tough. But that's what we need in a president in Iran to make sure that this conflict is done within the next couple of weeks.
And he means what he says. He says what he means. And he's got a wicked sense of humor. But if he says it, he means it. Yep. All right. We've got the amazing Mr. Matt Schlapp on the line here. Looks like Matt's out in the middle of a farm country out there. Bless you, Matt. You have myself, Trey Lindsay, and Michael Kosilniak. Thank you for joining us, Matt. By the way, first of all, you're the chairman of CPAC, and you're the CPAC. We had a blast. So thank you for allowing us to be there. What an amazing, amazing event. Unbelievable. How did it go from your perspective, other than very, very busy?
I mean, first of all, Dean, it's a real honor for you to be with us. I know we've done some work before, but I got great feedback from your speech and your appearance. So thanks for being with us. I have to say this. I had to put on my big boy pants at this CPAC because for the last 8 years, Donald Trump's appearance has dominated CPAC, and we love that, and we love him. And, CPAC never abandoned him. We stood with him on January 6th and every day going forward, and we put him on our stage in Orlando something like 47 days after January 6th. So we love him, and we love his agenda. That being said, we do have to figure out what we're going to do when he's not around to show up to everything. And I just didn't know I was going to have to do it so soon, but I was very impressed that the movement stood up and we filled that ballroom, and the fire marshal had to kick people out a couple of times because it was overflowing. And, that was the biggest ballroom in Texas. So that made me happy.
Fire marshal, it's like go back in college when you get the fire marshal showing up at your college dorm parties and throws you out. It's a rager. It was absolutely a rager. I have ideas what I think might be the highlights of there, maybe even the single highlight. I was great to see Ken Paxton there. He won the straw poll there for over John Cornyn. That was interesting. It was great to see Dr. Oz there. I would think maybe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Prince Reza Pahlavi and his speech that he gave on that day, perhaps that was a highlight, or maybe it was Ken Paxton. You tell me. I think you're getting attacked by some sort of creature out there for a second.
A fly is hanging out by the camera. I'm feeling a little bit like Mike Pence right now, but that's just that's an aside. Having the crown prince there was amazing. I've been talking to him for a couple of years. He's a very impressive person. I don't know if he's going to lead Iran, but he's going to play a role in either leading or helping to bring more freedom to Iran. He had a really important voice. He recognizes the state of Israel. His great line of the speech, Dean, and you watched it, was, what if instead of chanting death to America, the people of Iran were chanting God bless America? And for a lot of us who lived through the hostage crisis, that was, it was almost like a spiritual thing to hear.
Yeah, amazing. What a concept too, Matt. Preach unity. That's what we're all about here at the Homeland. We are about unity. Yeah, we'll make fun of people's points of view, but we really want to bring everybody together. I tell you what, being at CPAC really felt like home. It really felt wonderful to be able to be, especially a guy from Hollywood, you know, where I got to be real careful of what I say. I'm not that careful because I just don't care anymore. But, you know, you speak your mind and people are like, hey, thank you for standing up and doing this. And all the law enforcement there, by the way, you had a tremendous amount of law enforcement. God bless them so much. Extremely safe. Obviously, you had a lot of very important people there. But I saw people thanking law enforcement left and right and center and being so patriotic. It was a wonderful event. I know it was out without President Trump, who can suck the air out of a room in a heartbeat. I mean, he is one of a kind. But I thought it was an incredible event. Can you talk to me about a little bit about the Ken Paxton of it all? Was he the guest of honor? Was that what it was?
No. Ken is a friend of mine. He's running for the Senate, and I told him, you know, we had not endorsed him yet, even though we love him. And so I invited John Cornyn, his opponent as well. Senator Cornyn's been in the Senate a long time. And I said, look, you come make your pitch. Attorney General Paxton will come and make his pitch. We'll ask a question in the straw poll. And CPAC will be guided by that straw poll, which is exactly what he did. And Cornyn didn't even show up, which I think is disrespectful to conservatives. Paxton showed up, and then he had an overwhelming victory in the straw poll, which he was already their sentimental favorite. But when one guy shows up and the other guy doesn't, makes it really simple to know who you're going to vote for. And then we endorsed Ken Paxton on the last day of CPAC, and he surprised us by showing up, which was awesome. And I'm happy to stand with him. And by the way, Dean, he's going to win.
I hope so. I absolutely hope so. That would be amazing, I think, for Texas and for the Senate. I think it'd be incredible. Ken Paxton is certainly a fighter and then some. And it's funny, you know, like if I'm going to go on a date, if I got two girls to choose from, I'm going to usually date the one that shows up. And that's what happened when Ken showed up and John Cornyn didn't show up. That's just such a strange maneuver to not show up to CPAC when you're trying to win a Senate nomination.
You know, Dean, I know you had to say you're from Hollywood, but you just reiterated that by saying when you go on dates with two girls, you know, most of us were really lucky if we just got one. But, you know, this is, I guess, the way Hollywood operates. I don't know.
Well, slip of the tongue, sir. Slip of the tongue. I want to take that back. Yes. Do you guys have a question? Do you want to jump in? Are you guys good? Okay. Go ahead. Good, because I would still talk about dating two women at the same time. I never did that, Matt. I don't care what they say. Maybe but that's another story for another time, my friend. You run CPAC. So let's speak of your partner, Mercedes. By the way, she looks fantastic. Not that you don't, but she looks, Mercedes looks fantastic. I got to see her from afar. You guys are doing so, so very well. CPAC doing so well.
You know, Dean, she's Mercedes. I'm much more of a Buick. You know, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, but you married a Mercedes, so bless you. Bless you. But the whole conference was wonderful. We had an absolute blast. And we can't thank you enough. Dr. Oz spoke there as well. I didn't get a chance to hear his speech, but so many great things were done. I saw the news covering it left, right, and center, which made me very, very happy as a patriotic American. We appreciate very much being there.
Yeah, I can jump in. What's up? Yes. And Matt, how are you? Mike Kiselniak here. Just a quick question. So with the midterms coming up, what do you think the focus of the Conservative Party needs to be with those, you know, fastly approaching?
Well, you know, we picked our theme of CPAC, action over words, and that was intentional. I find all this sniping amongst different, you know, semi-famous and famous people about, you know, different topics is interesting intellectually to a certain point, but then it gets boring and quite honestly, it gets a little dangerous, which is we stitched together and CPAC played a role in this, stitching together this unlikely assortment of people. Dean keeps bringing up Dr. Oz, who we love, and Robert F. Kennedy closed down CPAC this year and gave a great interview with my wife. But we brought all these MAHA people on board. We were the first people to invite Robert F. Kennedy to speak at a conservative group. We were the first people to invite Tulsi Gabbard to speak at a conservative group when she was still a Democrat, when both of them, I think Kennedy might even still be a Democrat. And we invited them. We invited Donald Trump when he was a Manhattan Democrat to speak at CPAC. So, like, we have a long tradition of bringing people into this coalition, and I don't want to see it ripped apart. So our first thing we have to do is stop attacking each other in public so aggressively. So, you know, with such venom, I mean, you want to disagree on policies, I'm fine with that. But I mean, other than that, let's focus on beating the communists in America. Okay, like that's the central focus. And then the second piece is we are Americans. We are practical. We vote on our pocketbook. People have to feel like this economy is getting better and that Trump has the medicine to beat the Biden disease. If we can win that argument, we're going to win the midterms.
I like that. Medicine to beat the Biden disease, because it is a disease and it's easy to spread. And it leaves you with horrible sores and they fester. Trey, did you have a question for
Matt? Matt, Trey Lindsay here. Great to speak with you, sir. Again, the CPAC, my first time last week, phenomenal event. I'm going to tell these guys before we wrapped up, but now's a good time to do it. That was actually the closest resemblance I've felt as far as being around so many patriotic, you know, God-fearing, you know, United States of America loving citizens compared to what my last, you know, my former life in the military was. So
he was a SEAL Team 6 DevGru guy, man.
Oh, wow. So it was a phenomenal experience. And it was great just to be around so many patriotic Americans like I was in my former life. So, bro, other question for you, sir. Like that, we were talking a little bit earlier about the SAVE Act. What are your thoughts on the SAVE Act and how we get across the finish line, especially before the midterms?
Oof.
So this is why the Paxton Cornyn thing is so important. I think John Cornyn is a good man. I just feel like he's become fossilized, inert, in cement, like most of Republican senators. They look for a reason not to do something instead of a reason to do something. And we need more Ted Cruz's. We need more Mike Lee's. We need more Cynthia Lummis's. That's who we need in the United States Senate. So it's not just sending up another Republican. And we need numbers, too. I'm not saying we don't want every Republican we can get, but we need the hard chargers that say, you know what? We understand how serious the moment is. I just want you to know we do CPACs on 5 continents and over 12 countries. No one in the world votes in this crappy way that the United States does. Mm-hmm. They tend to vote on one day with paper ballots. They know who wins their election by the time they're doing the dishes at dinner time. This idea that the American democracy and our ballots are so complicated that it has to take days and weeks to figure out who won, that you need 16 different ways to vote over the course of a month. This is called a coup. This is called non-rules-based voting. This is the left's intent to try to subvert the will of the American people. And no one does this. And by the way, whenever you travel around the world, besides saying, how come our airports are clean and orderly and yours are a disaster? The second thing they say is, how come you vote in this asinine way? And it needs to stop. So I hope Trump keeps winning these cases at the Supreme Court. And I want Harmeet Dillon to keep doing her great work at DOJ.
Yeah, Harmeet, she is fantastic. In between her knitting, she gets a heck of a lot done. Her crocheting, she gets a heck of a lot done. She's pretty amazing.
She does.
How many countries is CPAC in? 5?
Over 12.
12. 12.
And we're on 5 continents. And we, at this CPAC, we announced new CPACs in the UK and in Germany.
Wow. That's got to be amazing when you're at those, places and seeing, you know.
Come with us.
I'll come. We'll talk about it. Let's do it. I'll do it for sure. I love your theme of unity, my friend. I love the idea of action over words. And it gave me something to say in my speech, which was when they said defund the police, I joined the police. That was my action. And when they said defund ICE, I joined ICE.
Yeah, baby.
So those are actions. Awesome. They're concrete actions. God bless you. Thank you for having us, Matt. It's a pleasure. I hope to go to more CPACs in more countries, more continents, more places. The Conservative Political Action Conference. And we appreciate the heck out of you, sir. Appreciate you. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, guys. And thanks for being there. And let's go save America and defeat communism. It's kind of simple.
That's God right. bless.
Awesome. That's right.
Thank Your you, mouth right. and God's ears, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right.
That's outstanding. Does that make you? I feel like it's a.
He's inspiring.
I'm ready to sing. God bless.
Proud to be an American.
Yeah. Well, as it should be. As it should be. That's outstanding. And I did give my speech at CPAC, and everybody's giving me a hard time now, saying that I'm going to run. I'm not going to run. I don't think. I sure hope not. Because the idea of being a politician, I mean, and then you look at what they did, you know, when Pete Hegseth, who I know so very well, when he was up for nomination, they just tried to destroy him. Mm-hmm. I know they're going to come after me if I do decide to run. They're going to be like, oh, he's dated a lot of girls. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go look at the Match Lap interview and say, he said he dated two girls at once. I did not say that. It was just sort of implied. But it's really ugly, ugly business. But if it's so ugly that good people don't want to get involved, we're not going to have good people in office.
I think a lot of times you just need to consider the source, though, too, Dean. I mean, yes. If you're pissing off the vile left, you're probably doing something right in your life. So,
what do they say? You're only getting flack if you're over the target?
Yep.
Of course, I look at you when I say that. Yeah. Wonderful bunch of Patriots on today.
Oh, yeah.
Sam, Jen Pellegrino, Match Lap. We had a great group, and we got to talk to talk about a lot of wonderful stuff at CPAC. I enjoyed the heck out of that. It was an absolute ringer, though, man. There was a lot going on there. It was great for us to be able to talk to so many different people and to try to introduce them to the homeland here on Proud American Studios. Any final thoughts to wrap it up, gentlemen?
Actually, yeah, one thing I wanted to discuss.
No, forget it. Not a chance.
I say before Matt hopped on, we were talking about Iran again.
Yes.
I think three things need to be figured out before we can actually close this chapter in the world history. Number one, the leadership of the new regime or the new party that's going to be taken over in Iran, number one. Number two, their energy, because as long as they have like their energy or ability to produce energy, they can rebuild very quickly. So have involvement in that. And number three is the uranium, for them to make sure that we either bury that under so many levels of the dirt, of the mountain, that they'll never get that again, or even if we have other options on the table to secure that uranium. I think those are the three things that we need to figure out with Iran going forward. Leadership, energy, the uranium.
Yeah, leadership is going to be a question because it seems like they're tremendously fractured. Mm-hmm. It'd be great if there was actually, you know, the internet was actually working. They're jamming Starlink. They're trying to jam. Listen, if you're trying to jam the internet to stop your citizens from speaking their minds or, you know, pointing out besiege checkpoints or things of that nature, if you're trying to do that, you're losing. And they're losing badly. That'll be interesting to see who does step up in that void. I'm sure that the conversations are multiple and everywhere, and we'll see what happens if Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi plays a role in that. It's going to be interesting. There's leaders emerging from within. Energy is important. President Trump is trying not to kill the infrastructure so that they can get out of this situation, the Iranians, with some sort of infrastructure intact. It's going to be interesting. It will not be a forever war. It's going to be over soon. Boots on the ground. People like to make this big deal over boots on the ground. We've got everybody there. No options off the table. I wouldn't tip my hand at all. I'd want them to expect 15 different things. And that's part of what President Trump does so well is, you know, maybe say something outlandish like, we should take over Canada, make it the 51st state, and then you get the reactions. Yep. I mean, his trolling level is amazing, but he says these things, and then he opens it up for negotiation. I think it's brilliant. It is 5D chess.
Yeah. Yeah, Dean, we had a great week here. We had a great CPAC. We've had, you know, great guests on. We have some great guests lined up.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, we do.
As you mentioned earlier, the homeland on Proud American Studios. Help us, join us to change the narrative on American media and change this country around.
Yeah, 100%. I should have said that. Well done. Well said, sir. It is. There's a reason we have a big American flag behind us, because we love this country. It is the greatest country in the history of the world, and we want to keep it that way. So we appreciate you for tuning in. Catch us next time on The Homeland, where we'll talk all things truth, justice, and the American way.